Nation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. School-aged children across America have been out of the classroom and distance learning from home since March. The new educational normal, as forced upon families by the COVID-19 pandemic, has made learning challenging for some and for others nearly impossible because of the disparities the pandemic has laid bare. Well, tonight, we'll examine what has happened and what parents and children can do to slow the summer educational slide and get back on track. My guests are Dr. Dawn Williams, Dean of the Howard University School of Education, and Charlotte Avery, family strategist, teacher, and mother of seven children. Lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is the program for parents and even some school-aged children. You need to call in and find out exactly what can be done to make sure that you're on track for the fall. And, of course, don't forget to tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Williams and Charlotte, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Williams, let me start with you. Can you kind of give me a thumbnail sketch of what a summer educational slide is and how it has been exacerbated since the pandemic shut down back in March?
Absolutely. And thank you, Harold, for having me here on the show today. I am a fan of the Daily Drum. So the summer slide is something that's normal that we speak about in education often, and we really address that when students return back to school. Summer slide is when children have had a host of fun over the summer and did not engage too much in anything remedial or even enriching in the academic sense. So when they come back to school, teachers generally spend about the first 2 weeks assessing students of where they are so that they know what to focus on when starting the new grade level. Now, of course, during this pandemic, it's that summer slide in addition to the absence from formal instruction in person within school. So, yes, it will be exacerbated. But what I do want to encourage parents as well as educators is that we know that there is going to be some loss. We have to assess that loss, but what we don't want to do is to keep reminding the children of the loss.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. And one of the things that we've heard so much about during the past several months is that some children have done fairly well, but then others have been hamstrung, not only because they may learn better in a classroom setting, some others may not have access to the technology that allows them to do the distance learning. And the reality is there are some students who have just not been engaged since the shutdown. And so that really makes things difficult for them, Dr. Williams.
It certainly does. And as educators, we are taught that there are different learning styles for children. And with them being at home and for the most part learning remotely, some having some live instruction, but some having tape-recorded videos as instruction, there has absolutely been an impact on, I think, even the morale for students. And that morale and what we also end up calling SEL, social learning, definitely has an impact on academic outcomes.
But Charlotte, you've been on this program many times before, and you know, a lot of our listeners know you. You and your husband, you all have a basketball team. You have five starters and two on the bench, seven children, some are in school, and some you've homeschooled. Kind of tell me what it's been like for you since all of the children have been at home.
Wow, that is a really, really great question, because, you know, when I homeschooled my children, I homeschooled my oldest two children. So, you know, I had two at home and I had Some were in school at the time when I was homeschooling, some were in preschool. But now, because all of them are school age, and I mean, we have children literally, you know, in three different schools, middle school, high school, and elementary school. Now that everybody is home, and you know, if you know me, and you do, you know, I love for my children to be home. But I'm going to tell you, it hasn't been an easy road having all seven of them home, because it's different homeschooling two versus homeschooling seven. But because I had already been down the homeschool road, like, I knew how, once they started doing virtual learning, because be clear, like, homeschooling and virtual learning are not the same thing. But what I was able to do is I was able to go back into my homeschool toolbox and go back to the things that I was doing before. Exampling, like, scheduling. Scheduling is very important. It's very important for children to have routines. I'm blessed that, you know, I was able to make my basement a classroom, so my younger children all have a desk, and I wish I could show you a picture, but it literally looks like a classroom as if they were at school, because each of them have a desk and they have a schedule. But here's the thing, like, some of my kids, they are on alternating schedules, so sometimes I'm with some of them and sometimes I'm not. But it's been a very interesting journey. And then, you know, I have some kids that are in advanced academic placement classes, and even to see that paradigm, how it has shifted for the rigor of what they were doing in school versus, you know, when March came and everything shut down, to see how some of their learning changed. It was very, very interesting. Very interesting.
Brings a whole new definition to the phrase, are you smarter than a fourth grader?
Seriously.
Yeah, really. I mean, you have your hands full. Dr. Williams, when we talk about what parents can do now, we are not talking so much about a summer slide. We are talking about a summer drop. What is the first best advice that you can give to parents right now for them to try to address this?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, and first let me just give major kudos to Charlotte, because that is phenomenal, the work that you're doing. And I know that your children will look back and appreciate that later. But for right now, what is very important for parents to do is to plan for the fall. So right now during the summer, the children are probably getting a mixture, and I hope that they're doing some recreational activities, because when we were somewhat quarantined or more quarantined, they barely went outside. So I hope they get an opportunity to do that, but they need to plan. And Charlotte mentioned the top thing on the list, and that is creating a routine or a schedule that is going to be something that you can practice each day. And that schedule is going to include having a dedicated learning space, the time that you dedicate to working with your child or children, and sometimes for working parents especially. Yeah. They need to work that out with their employer. So they may need to say, I need some flexibility during the day, and they may be able to identify a two-hour time frame of which they are not going to be available because they'll be working with their children. If you have younger children, it's even a little more critical, because they're not as much of independent learners as our older children are. The other part of that plan would be including how much time you're going to dedicate to education. And it doesn't have to be all in one block. So you do have that kind of flexibility. If the school day on average is about 7 hours, it depends on the age of your child of how many hours you're going to dedicate to something academic oriented. That's more formally academic oriented. So we're talking about the elementary age, we're looking at approximately 2 hours per day. In that 2 hours, you have to look at learning as an everyday experience. So that can be cooking, walking, going on mild hikes, observing nature. That can be financial planning for some of your older children, having them watch you pay bills and have that kind of understanding of how money works. I have a rising first grader, and we just implemented chores, and he's starting to learn about money, and we're adding, et cetera. Those kind of items count for learning experiences, even driving and having them look at mile markers. So you'll be surprised on how much that children can learn without the formalized curriculum. They will get the formal curriculum from the school, and that's another thing that I would suggest. Reach out to the teachers and find out about that curriculum, something that's called the scope and sequence. So you want to know the schedule of when they're going to be introducing concepts. This is helpful because if they're talking about weather patterns, as an example, you might be able to find an activity online that looks at clouds, or so that you can be prepared when that lesson or that unit approaches, there are extra activities at home that you can do to help support their learning.
202-319-7810. Hold on for a second, Charlotte, please. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about how to slow the summer educational slide of your children. Of course, all of them have been at home since March, and so that situation has really been intense, more than normal, because they just haven't been in school. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I did want to ask both of you, before we even continue this conversation, if you have at least, you know, one resource, perhaps something online that parents listening right now may be able to look to help, you know, kind of gin up the educational process during the summer. Charlotte, do you have anything you can suggest real quick?
Yes, one of my favorite programs online is called myon.com. And one reason why I love this program is because children can go in there of all ages and they can find age-appropriate books. And they can either read the book or they can turn it on so that the book can be read to them. For younger readers, that's amazing because it teaches them fluency and all that, and what, you know, tone should sound like and things of that nature. And so that's actually one of my favorite programs.
Well, now, what's that again? Can you spell that
for me? It's called myon.com, myon.com.
Okay, great, great. And Dr. Williams, any suggestion for resources that parents can kind of search through and get a leg up?
Oh, absolutely. The great thing about now is that because of the situation that we're in, there are a lot of resources that are free. So I'll give you some of my favorites. One of them is Teaching for Change. And this is something that's a resource for teachers, but parents can also use it. They have unit lessons that are culturally affirming, and they have books of all age groups for parents and teachers to choose from. But in addition to that, there are live online classes and camps through programs that is called OutSchool. So that's www.outschool.com, where they
that's
can learn the skills.
School? Slow down OutSchool. For me. Out, O-U-T school?
OutSchool, that's correct.
Okay.
And these are live and classes that they can chime into, many of them free, where they can learn to play instruments, they can do STEM activities, and I'll mention two more. Another one is an oldie but goodie. It's called Scholastic. And if you recall being in school and you had those magazines, well, they have a whole website dedicated to that for all age groups. And the last one, I'm trying to remember which one that was that I wanted to offer up. Well, I think, it's more so for parents. So there is an organization called the Mid-Atlantic Equity Consortium.
Whoa, that's a mouthful.
Oh, wow.
One more time, please.
Mid-Atlantic Equity Consortium. And this is really a tool more so for families overall. And it really helps families. They have a webinar every Thursday, and it's called the Family Room. And if you feel like you're at your wit's end, they can help you through that, which a lot of parents feel that way. One thing I want to make sure that we express to parents is to practice grace during this time. And when I say grace to everyone, grace to your children, grace to the teachers, because we may be asking them a lot because we're trying to figure this out as well. And also grace for yourself. Many parents may feel like they're not doing enough. We are under a pandemic. So I just want them to remember that.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that all of those resources will be posted on our website tonight on WHUR.com before 9 o'clock. So don't worry about scrambling to write it down. We'll have it for you. And please stay with us. We are going to be taking some phone calls next. Satima calling from Baltimore, you're next. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141. The original Quiet Storm will continue on WHUR. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This conversation continues, as well as your phone calls, on Sirius XM in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our discussion about the educational summer slide exacerbated by the pandemic shutdown. My guests are Dawn Williams, Dean of the Howard University School of Education, and Charlotte Avery, family strategist, teacher, and mother of seven children. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We were going to talk to Satima. She hung up. Satima, if you're out there still listening, please give us a call back. I promise I will take your phone call. Here's the question that a lot of people are wondering. How can this really help? Pandemic notwithstanding, most people don't have the advantages of being a teacher like Dr. Williams, like Charlotte Avery. A lot of parents out there, they are just working stiffs, just trying to hold it together. So how can they become educational experts in such a short period of time, Dr. Williams?
Well, we're not expecting for them to be experts, but we are expecting them to be partners. Mm-hmm. And what this means is that you are in communication with your child's teacher. And if there is a skill set that you're having problems explaining, or if the child is having problems, that's what they're there for. Teachers should be making sure that they are allotting time to work with children in a variety of ways during this remote learning time. And I also say this, and I'm sure this is something that Charlotte also practices, is this is a time for us to work together. So you may need to find other community members who are going through the same thing and see how you can collaborate to support your children. And that can mean a number of things. So right now, the very hot topic in the news is pods that are popping up that the families are forming, or families who are opting to go the full homeschooling route and creating what they call co-ops. And Charlotte, I know, is a better expert on that topic, but having the support of the larger community, which may mean your family or even neighbors, would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Explain that to me, the pods. What does that mean exactly?
So a pod is really, it's more of a community homeschool group. It's a group of people who are coming together to say, Dr. Williams was saying, you know, as far as co-ops and things of that nature. So my area of expertise might not be math, but another parent in my community, their expertise might be math. My area of expertise might be reading and writing. And so what ends up happening is that parent ends up teaching their children and my children and other people who've decided to come together to teach that particular subject that is their strength. And it's actually really beautiful. I mean, co-ops are a really amazing thing because parents get to, you know, a different parent gets to teach your child. You get to have a break, but then you end up, you know, saying, you know what, I agree also to teach your child this particular thing that's my expertise.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. And this is obviously, we are talking about parents who are volunteering their time. So this is like the bake sale at school. Everybody kind of contributes.
Yes, absolutely. And it's an agreement. Like everybody agrees to a day and a time and a subject that they're teaching that particular group of 5, 10 children or what have you. Absolutely.
Dr. Williams, what is the biggest struggle for parents during the summer in trying to keep their children up to snuff, so to speak?
I think that balance is the biggest struggle. And as an educator and a parent, I can attest to this. And the balance of having to work with your child. And again, my child is a rising first grader, so he's not an independent learner. So when I'm working with him, I have to fully be focused on working with him. But I also have a lot of heavy demands at work. And then while also being a teacher, I'm getting a little personal here right now, but while also being a teacher, it's a little different when it's your own child than when I was teaching a class of 27 children in my class. However, the biggest struggle for parents right now is balance. So it's important that they still, I'm going to emphasize their community again, whoever that might be, where even parents who are in the same class as your child, parents have group me's for their particular classrooms and they support each other. Then they ask, did anyone understand that assignment that's due on Thursday? And they chime in. So the isolation piece is very real, make sure that you are not going to succumb to it and make you feel more depressed about it, you do need to connect to other parents who are going through the exact same thing that you are, and there are plenty.
I want to piggyback off of that, too, because I think that what Dr. Williams is saying is absolutely spot on. But the other thing that I find that parents are really struggling with is, you know, is whatever decision I make going to be the best decision for my child? You know, and then sometimes parents, you know, have a level of inadequacy about, you know, the scheduling piece or the teaching piece or what have you, or, you know, what is somebody else doing in their household that's working? And my whole thing, my perspective on that, when people ask me, you know, because I am the family strategist and I, you know, do a lot of strategies for my own family and others, I tell people, listen, like Dr. Williams said, give yourself grace, but also you have to do what works for your family and your household because there's no cookie cutter family. You know, I have 7 kids, so the way that I'm doing virtual learning or quote-unquote homeschooling my children is not going to be the same as the way Dr. Williams might teach her child. And, I mean, households are different. You have the working household, you know, parents who are working inside and outside the home, or you have the stay-at-home parent. And it's not easy, but you have to do what's going to work for your family.
Absolutely.
And honor that and be okay with it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sastama, thank you for calling back, calling from Baltimore. What's on your mind?
I just want to say thanks for taking my call, and I appreciate
sure.
that you guys are taking the time to have this conversation because it's really important. My situation is that I work full-time. My husband's home with our kids. We have 2, one of whom is supposed to start kindergarten this year, the other who's 18 months old. My question is about suggestions you may have in terms of how to keep the 5-year-old engaged in her classwork while not ignoring the 18-month-old who has no idea what's going on when we live in a pretty small space. And I do anticipate trying to set up kind of a classroom feel for her, but, you know, we don't have the ability to make it that separated. So if there are any tips or pointers for managing the differing age groups, that would be really appreciated.
Charlotte, I'm going to let you handle that one first.
So, you know, I think the beautiful part of it is that even your 18-month-old is in an area in her stage of life where she wants to learn. And so you have one in kindergarten and one who is just a toddler. But the thing is, it's going to be scheduling, but it's going to also be while your kindergartner is in school, also having an area where your 18-month-old can still do her own kind of learning, busy work or what have you. So she's not being disruptive to the other child. And, I mean, you can make a separate area for your 5-year-old. And you can also, if you have the ability, to make a different kind of area for your 18-month-old where that 18-month-old is doing, you know, like playing with, like counting noodles and doing different things, you know, in your household. It can be challenging, but it's not as challenging as you, I don't think it's as challenging as you would think it is. And I know it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around right now, but I'm going to tell you what, scheduling for your five-year-old is going to be crucial because she's going to have her own school schedule, especially if, you know, your husband is going to be at home with her, but he's going to have to monitor her. And monitoring your 18-month-old, it's really going to be when your five-year-old is doing school, is your 18-month-old safe?
When you say safe, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I'm saying is it's easy to, for a parent to be distracted and get in, so involved with the child who's in school that, you know, sometimes you may be able, you may have to put your 18-month-old in a playpen or in a gated area where, you know, the sockets are covered and things like that. So the 18-month-old can't get into a lot of things, but so that you still have them both in your eye view. Do you understand what I'm saying? So while your five-year-old may be at the kitchen table or whatever doing work, your 18-month-old may be in a gated area, but your husband can still have an eye view of both of them.
Excellent. Excellent idea.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Dr. Williams, do you have a suggestion, even with the advanced rising first grader that you are currently raising?
Well, with the question from the last caller, what I also would recommend is that the five-year-old takes some part in the 18-month-old's learning experience.
Yes.
So there are some things that she can teach her sibling. It could be colors. It could be shapes. But that helps to empower the five-year-old. It helps with their bonding relationship. And then that also gives the 18-month-old opportunity to have some learning. And who knows, that five-year-old can grow up to be a teacher.
Right. And it is true that older siblings love teaching their younger siblings, and younger siblings love learning from their older siblings. Mm-hmm. So I think that's great, a great suggestion, Dr. Williams.
Well, Sastama, thank you so much for calling in. Good luck to you and your husband as you continue to embark on this easiest pie road called parenting. And so good luck to you. I want to continue on this particular issue, though, about, you know, some of the other things that you can recommend for parents, Dr. Williams, because I know that we're going to lose you in about 2 minutes. So some final thoughts from you.
Yes, I'm glad to. Thank you. And my apologies. I do have to run to yet another meeting.
I do understand. We appreciate you coming in and spending some time with us when you can. But please go right ahead.
So two last points that I want to make is to when you're going over the overall curriculum, and as for us, we had 12 subjects that we would be doing weekly in the spring, I would give my son some choice. Which one do you want to work on right now? Which one do you want to work on today? You'd be amazed of how far of engagement, increased engagement, if you give the children some choice. And that part is somewhat the Montessori style of learning, of letting children exercise some choice and be a part of their planning for the learning experience. And the last thing that I want to be sure to leave with the listeners is to use this time also to introduce content that is culturally engaged. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've been doing recently, and thanks to having to watch Black Panther quite a few times with my six-year-old, is he talks about the ancestors all the time. Mm. And so this is my opportunity to talk about our culture, our family history, our heritage, et cetera. And these are all the things, particularly for African-American parents, that we think are missing from the general curriculum. So this is the time to do so, and you can do so and start with it from a very personalized perspective and then grow to people in history that have had grand impacts on the larger society. And I'd be glad, Harold, to share the number of resources that are trusted resources to help families through this learning time.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I would ask you certainly to send that stuff off to our intrepid producer, Candace Atkins, and the information that you've already shared, along with the information that Charlotte has shared, is going to be, as I said, on our website tonight before 9 o'clock. Dr. Williams, I appreciate your assistance. Stay safe out there. We're going to take a break. We're going to continue this discussion with Charlotte Avery about making sure that you can do the best you can to stop the educational summer slide that has been exacerbated by the pandemic shutdown. Dr. Williams, thank you so much. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back. We are continuing our discussion about the educational summer slide, how to slow it down or stop it altogether. Of course, it has been exacerbated by the pandemic shutdown, but we want to make sure that our children are in the best possible position when school reopens, however it does, during the new normal for the fall. So, Charlotte, talk to me about the things that even as a teacher and a veteran homeschooler, some of the things that are really challenging for you and that parents need to watch out for.
So one of the things that parents need to watch out for is really exhaustion and irritability, because I think with, you know, the fact that we all are in close proximity to each other in your household, like in my household, I mean, you know, we have a family of 9 people. So, you know, on any given day, we've got all these different personalities, and yet at the same time, like, I'm always trying to plan and schedule and, you know, just keep them, you know, active and going. As a parent, you know, I have to make sure that while I'm trying to plan things for them and everything, that I'm also taking care of myself and, you know, while still keeping them engaged and active. You know, like right now, a lot of people are not doing recreational activities. Like right now, my son would be playing basketball. Well, he's not. And so because he's not playing basketball right now, I mean, he's frustrated. He's like, I want to go train. I want to do this. Well, he's got to train out in front of our house. And we've got to make allowances for these types of things. Like I've had to plan and create like fun activities for them that keep them engaged. And, you know, I think the benefit of us having a large family is that they have each other to play with. So they have like built-in friends kind of, even though they get on each other's nerves. But it's also, you know, who else is social distancing their family the way that you're social distancing your family? So that, like, I have children who are extroverts. I have some children who are introverts. Some of my children who are extroverts, they need the energy of other people. Are you going to let them FaceTime with friends and things like that? Because they can't really, they may not be able to necessarily go hang out. Or do you have a key, do each of your children have at least one person that you feel safe and comfortable in the fact that another family has sanitized and done the things that you've done so that your kids can have time to hang out with other people and have other social interactions?
When you're talking about some foundational educational activities, such as reading, for example,
mm-hmm.
if one of your perfect 7 children decides to misbehave, okay, and have you ever said, okay, go read a book because you're acting out? And a lot of parents do that. You know, how do you keep from having a child see reading a book as a punishment instead of an enjoyable activity?
So I really don't use reading as a punishment for my children, because I really want them to have a love for reading. So mm-hmm. that's like something that I would never, ever use. And in our house, like, they have to read at least 20 minutes a day. Like, sometimes they might miss the mark because we might just be busy doing something, but that's the general rule in our household. So there are certain things, like reading is not something that I use as a punishment, because it's something that I want them to enjoy, because I want them to be able to find adventure in pages, right? And so, you know, for me, so I try to be a very scheduled person. And so one thing that I try to do, I think summertime is the perfect time to let your kids play but they also need to be able to think. They need to be doing things that are going to fire off their, to really fire up their brain power. So what I did is a friend of mine asked me, for a schedule, like what to do with her children every day. And so I wanted to give her things that were not going to be, they were going to be educational things, but they would still be fun things. So like I gave her like Math Monday. And math could be doing something like workbooks. Like I love the Summer Bridge workbooks, and you can find those like online or you can find them in a teacher store. But I love those workbooks. I love doing like simple math games. I love putting puzzles. My kids put puzzles together, and we do it as a family activity because puzzles help to engage your brain. But also a lot of people who are good at math have always had a love for putting puzzles together. So that's something that they do. And then also for math, we do cooking activities so that they can learn measurements and things of that nature. And then there's like Science and Technology Tuesday. Science could be doing something like an experiment with the vinegar and the baking soda and watching it like fizz and explode, or making Play-Doh or something like that. And then there's like Wellness Wednesday that's, something has to do with like exercise, health and fitness or what have you. And then Thursday, I kind of love this one. It's called Life Thrills. Instead of doing life skills, it's like letter writing, counting money, accounting, cooking, and just doing things that they would need to learn how to do like later down the road. Like my older children, they're washing laundry and things like that. Hallelujah, because I despise the laundry. And then Friday is like free for all Friday, where it's their personal choice. In our family, it's actually Free for All Friday and Funnel Cake Friday, because on Friday, every Friday, we make funnel cake. And then, but like I said, reading is something that should be happening every day. But it's important to have your kids doing things that are engaging their brains, but it doesn't have to be in a way that they actually know that that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. What is the tuition for Charlotte Avery University? Because
oh, my God.
You seem like you got it all together there.
I don't, though. I'm telling you, I don't. I don't have it all together. I mean, some days I do, and some days I miss the mark. Dr. Williams was saying, parents have to learn how to balance. Balance is key. Well, for me, balance doesn't exist, because if you're balancing, that means you're giving equal time to everything, and I don't have the ability to do that. I have my children. I have to spend time with my husband because you know how much I love him. Mm-hmm. And then I have my own work that I do with my clients and writing books and different things of that nature. So there's some days where I may not give, 50% of my time to my children because I might be working on something else. And you have to know how to blend, not necessarily balance, because you'll never give equal weight to everything in your life. It's just not going to happen.
Here's an important question.
Sure.
Just a couple of hours ago, President Trump from the White House again emphasized that he wants schools to fully open. All of your children are home. As I said, mm-hmm. you have a history of homeschooling as well as having them in school. Considering where we are right now, if schools were to open in your community, and you're in Virginia, correct?
Mm-hmm.
In Northern
mm-hmm.
Virginia, would you send your kids to school?
I would not. I would not send them to school. And the reason why I wouldn't is because I have not seen a clear, solid plan that keeps the children safe in school. Now, some of my kids, when we had when Fairfax County was first having, toying with the option of, kids being able to be in school 2 days a week versus, and having the option of virtual learning, my older children, especially like my extroverted children, were like, yes, I want to go to school 2 days a week. Well, here's the thing is that because of the size of our family, that one child going to school puts our whole family at risk, and they haven't given a solid plan for that yet. How you're going to really truly social distance, in school. And so I already knew that if they said that the kids had to go back to school or anything like that, that my kids weren't going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really difficult thing for parents who, wherever they happen to live, where they're still wrestling with what is safe, what is convenient, what is best intellectually for their children. You have extended families. There's so many different issues. Charlotte, I've got to end here, but I will say this. If you have a picture of the Charlotte Avery University classroom in the basement, send it to me. I'll post it. I promise.
I do. I will. I'll definitely send it. I'll send it to you with a few other websites that I didn't get a chance to talk about, but I'll definitely send it.
Well, thank you so much, Charlotte. I really appreciate it. Tell you and the family to stay safe, and you have my very best. You really do.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy our time together.
Absolutely. Also, we want to thank Dr. Dawn Williams, Dean of the Howard University School of Education, for participating in this conversation as well. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, July 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.